We are Kieran Maher.
The last one for you, I've just found a very interesting question from someone's written in. If horses could talk, what would they say they need more or less of in terms of feed?
They would say...
G'day guys, we are back with another episode of The Ferret's Den. I'm Josh Cadlett-Kavanagh, Head of Data and Performance at Kieran Maher Racing, and I'm joined by Katrina Anderson, who is Head of Sports Science. Kat, what are we talking about today?
We are talking about nutrition. I think this is a very interesting episode. If you've got any interest in horses, you own a horse, and just understanding the equine gut, I think that's been most fascinating for me over the last year and a half, as we've sort of put a bit more time and resources into nutrition.
Yeah, it's definitely fascinating. And I think it started with Kieran being a bit curious about what, why he was feeding horses certain diets, and how we could optimize that a little bit better is to align with our overall stable strategic vision for sort of the 2022-23 season, and then followed on with the 23 and 24. And then earlier this year, we obviously developed a relationship with Coprice Prides, being our exclusive feed supplier. And now we're starting to work with them about how to really leverage their R&D unit and look into customizing some really cool feed and working with our in-house nutritionist, who came on board at the start of 2023, and has been a real big asset to us. And not only does Nerida Mickey-Gilchrist, who is going to be on the show, you know, try to implement some new changes that will obviously optimize the horse's feed and get them optimally performing on the track as well as their all-round well-being, but she obviously teaches us within. She's really great about bringing us along on the journey and not just implementing change, but giving us an understanding about why, which really helps myself and Kat then explain that to the rest of the stable.
Yeah, it's been a really enjoyable journey. And like you say, Josh, I think Nerida's been really good at educating us. So then I think the understanding is, well, that's what I've really enjoyed the most. And understanding how horses actually get the nutrition and energy and the way they break down their food and how we can, and how important nutrition is across the board. And it's not just a simple feed and input and output, but how it correlates with the behavior, with ulcers, with well-being, and really trying to optimize that. So what has been the most enjoyable sort of aspect of this journey yourself?
Yeah, this is just some really, really good tidbits that Nerida just told us along the way, as well as the overall major parts about feeding. But some of the most interesting ones for me have been where horses have come from. They're obviously naturally grazing on the ground in their natural habitat. And obviously we have hay racks in the industry, and a hay rack sort of doesn't allow a horse to drain its lungs. So Nerida's big one for us is getting rid of the hay racks and just letting them forage off the ground to naturally let them drain their lungs of fluid, which they wouldn't get to do if they were sort of feeding from hay racks. And then also just that carrying on with hay is we've been able to, obviously I link everything back to data points and graph visualizations, and we've been able to sort of quantify and see the difference in ulceration rates of our horses, especially the severe ones in grade 3 and grade 4s, with simply feeding some, ensuring there's sort of hay, ad-lib hay there constantly for these horses, and ensuring they have something in their stomach before working in each morning. And we've seen those ulceration rates come down drastically since employing Nerida and implying some of those across our stables. So it's been good to see that effect of something that she's been able to action across the way, just as simple as that.
Yeah, and I think that is the most important part that we've learned on this journey is that we have horses in and it's unnatural for them to be stabled, and being able to try to get closer to what they were designed to do as grazing animals in the wild, and being able to use nutrition to help that part. And I also have really enjoyed getting that objective measure and understanding. So when we look at sort of fecal samples and pHs and understanding how that backtracks to hindgut acidosis and what that means and how nutrition and how we can use that to sort of optimize nutrition for that individual horse has been probably the most interesting part of the journey for me.
Yeah, it's just fascinating, isn't it? To think that, you know, how do we get closer to them in their natural environment? So, without further ado, we'll bring on Nerida McIlchrist.
Nerida, how's things?
Great. Thanks, Josh and Kat. Thanks for having me on today.
Very exciting to have you on. No doubt, every time we catch up and chat, all things nutrition has been good. Just to give us a little bit of a background of your background, what you've done in the nutrition space. You've worked globally across some countries. Where sort of your favorite countries have been to look into? And yeah, just give us a bit of a background.
Yeah, radio. I guess my horse background started as a kid, grew up on a beef cattle property, and there was no roads on our property, so it was only really accessible by horse. So I spent an awful lot of hours on a horse as a kid, which I loved, and went and studied agriculture at university when I finished school, and was destined really to be a dairy nutritionist because I loved nutrition. It just made sense to me. I can't really explain it. I just absolutely fell in love with it as soon as I started learning about it. And I think the fact that nutrition really drives everything in terms of an organism, a human, a horse, doesn't really matter what it is. It's the basis of everything, really, as far as I'm concerned, but I'm a nutritionist. But as I finished university, the dairy industry deregulated and I ended up being offered a PhD in horse nutrition, which I jumped at because it was like 3 years of messing around with horses. And I guess my first real introduction to the Australian racing industry was I was a first year PhD student and went through, it was just over 70 racing stables in New South Wales and weighed all of the grains and recorded all of the supplements being fed and looked at how horses were being fed back then. It was like 2000, 2001, mainly in terms of the grain. So I was mostly interested in how is the grain being processed, how well is it being digested, and how is the grain affecting the horse's hindgut. So that's been really my major interest in thoroughbred nutrition for a long time. And yeah, since then, I've just had the best career. I started Equalize Horse Nutrition as soon as I finished studying and did a lot of work with feed companies in Australia developing feeds. So a lot of, if you go into a feed store, a lot of the products in there these days are ones that I've created. And yeah, more recently have been doing quite a bit of work offshore. So I've worked with racing stables in Saudi, worked with the racing stable that won the racing premiership there for many years in a row while I was working with them, have worked with racing stables in the UAE and mostly now working with racing stables in Japan, which is really cool because they feed very differently to the way we feed in Australia. So it's nice for me to see that contrast between the country.
Yeah, fantastic. It's been great having Nerida come on board with Kieran. We've certainly learned a lot in the past year and a half just listening to you talk about nutrition and digestibility and hindgut. Might be good to get a bit more insight in that area. I know that we've certainly learned how the digestibility of the grains affect the hindgut and then how we can also measure that and change feeds to help horses. But you go into a feed store, like you say, there's a lot of products and we're all feeding without really understanding how that's affecting our horse and their nutrition and energy requirements. And yeah, a bit more information about that. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's a tricky. I love thoroughbreds for the fact that they present a real nutritional challenge. You've got 55 million years of evolution. Horses have been on the earth for 55 million years and we only domesticated them 5,000 years ago, which sounds like a long time, but when you look at their entire evolutionary timeline, it's 0.01% of the time that they've been on earth. You flip it around the other way, 99.99% of the time, humans were no part of a horse's life and they evolved to eat continuously and to be either grazing or browsing, foraging. So a really high fiber diet that was eaten over almost consistently over a 24-hour period. They'll stop and have a sleep for a few hours at a time or whatever, or a rest, but they really eat all the time. And now we've obviously created the thoroughbred breed and we're wanting them to perform feats that they don't normally perform as wild horses, and so their nutrition has to change to support that performance. But at the same time, we're still stuck with a 55 million year old gut, or gut that's evolved over that time. So feeding these horses really comes down to how can we keep their diet as close to their, like, the diet that they evolved to thrive on, whilst also still giving them enough energy to train and race the way that we want them to train and race. And really a lot of that comes down to we feed them grain, which is not a natural part of their diet, but what form is that grain in becomes a really important question, because if we give them something like raw corn, cracked corn, sliced corn, doesn't really matter what it's called, if it's not cooked, their energy, which is found as the starch in the middle of the grain, so you break open a piece of corn and you see the white stuff in the middle, that's where grains hold all of their energy. And that starch in a raw grain, be it rice, corn, barley, sorghum, doesn't really matter what it is, it's not digestible. So it's so tightly bound up that the horse can't actually get to it to cut it up into small enough pieces, into glucose in this case, to be absorbed. And that's a lot of what we've looked at with you guys, is how do we get energy into them in the form of grain that's actually digestible, so that when you're feeding your horses grain, it's being fully digested or as fully digested as possible in the small intestine, and then we're not dumping a whole heap of undigested grain in the hindgut. And that's what we've been doing with you mostly, is measuring the pH of the manure, because it will tell us, like, if you've got grain going into the hindgut, it gets fermented and turns into acids. And when you get too much acid, you'll start to lower the pH. And we see that in the manure. So a lot of what we've been looking at and the ways of measuring it is measure your pH of the manure. And if it's too low, it's telling you that too much grain is going into the hindgut.
Yeah, it's been a great measure that we've actually been able to get an objective number, make a change, and then see improvement. And I think the trainers like to see a number to say that something is working.
And I think we've had real buy-in there from the ground staff, because I think that's something we've learned with the data and sports science journey along the way, all facets of it. But this one was interesting. I think we didn't even necessarily tell some people about what it was actually measuring and what it was showing. But we did a little bit of a intro to data and sports science up in Sydney, and everyone had bought into it. And they realized then on what they were measuring, what to look for as well, because obviously you don't sometimes necessarily have to get the measure. You can see the grain undigested in the poo of the horse really from time to time. Like, it's not rocket science in a way, but getting that measure is really nice to have. And I've just looked at our database and we've got measurements now of pH readings since we've started. It's come a long way, and seeing, I think, the effect of putting these horses on, whether it's new feed or something that's easier to digest, or whether or not that simply is just lowering the Madipa and then replacing that with the oils. I think you've really brought that on board a lot with the oils as a supplement. Nerida, I think talk a little bit about that possibly and how that can be quite beneficial to their diets.
Yeah. So the thing with grain and maybe why it's relevant, it's one thing to measure something and go, oh, cool, we've got a number, but how does that then relate to performance? So if you're making the hindgut of a horse acidic, you're affecting so much in terms of overall health and then also ability to perform. So that the number that we're getting with the pH is really telling you that you're actually shifting the population of microbes in the gut. And then when we shift the population of microbes in the gut, you start to have an effect on how well they can digest their hay, so how much energy they're actually able to extract out of fiber, how well their immune system is going to function, what their behavior is going to be like. There's all of these things that gut microbe population will impact. And it's actually really mind-blowing. You start to read research in that space and it's almost scary. You go, oh my goodness, it's the same for us. If we mess up our gut microbes, we have so many impacts on our mental health and our immune system and susceptibility to certain diseases. So the oil really comes in as a way of getting a lot of energy in diet without putting more starch in, so without putting more grain in, because while we can cook grains and feed it to them in certain ways to help it be digested, there's a limit to starch digestion in that gut, because 55 million years of evolution says that they didn't actually really focus a lot on digesting grains. So they don't have enzymes in their gut, and enzymes are just like little pairs of scissors that cut up nutrients so that they can be absorbed. They just don't have enough of the starch digesting enzymes to digest massive quantities of grain. So once you go up, my rough rule of thumb is like a kilo per 100 kilos of body weight of a grain-based feed. Once you go over that, you're pushing the boundaries of what a horse's gut can digest. But sometimes horses need more energy than that in terms of grain, and that's where we start to bring the oils, just to top up their energy.
Yeah, and obviously with that in mind and acidity in the gut, and we're trying to control that from a gut health point of view, obviously the lifestyle of the racehorse is very different from their natural or how they've evolved as horses, and trying to manage with through sort of feeding practices with timing of feed, hay. We give our horses bute post-race and salt them, so your antibiotics. Yeah, talk maybe through how we can use nutrition to help manage the actual lifestyle of our racehorses being in a stabled environment.
So probably the biggest impact of having them in a stabled environment and not just wandering around out freely and grazing is that the stomach releases acid 24/7. And it's a unique feature of a grazing animal, a monogastric grazing animal. So horses have only got a single stomach like us, but we're meal feeders, so we'll eat in specific meals. And when we think about food, smell food, start to eat food, our stomach starts to release acid. But then when we stop eating, it just switches it off because it knows that it's not going to have a constant supply of food. Horses in the natural environment are eating almost 24 hours a day. Like, they'll space their grazing periods out over a 24-hour period. So the stomach just never saw the need for an on-off switch. It was like a surplus piece of hardware that was not required, so it was never installed, which means that for racehorses in stables, if they're going for long periods of time overnight feed, and particularly without forage, so hay is most important from this perspective, if they go for long periods and then you bring them out early in the morning to train them, you've got a stomach that's got a pool of acid sitting down the bottom, and when you work them, that stomach either squashes or the acid will splash. So just from the movement of the horse in the particularly chop, the acid will actually splash upwards. And the problem with that is that the top section of the stomach never developed any protection from acid because the stomach was always full of fiber and also full of saliva. And still now in grazing horses, the stomach is going to be pretty much always full of fiber and full of saliva. The acid can't physically splash. And the fluid sitting in the bottom of the stomach is also a reasonably high pH. So it'll be up above a pH of 4. But what you'll find in horses that are stable, if they don't have access to hay, is that fluid can drop as low as a pH of 1, which is 1,000 times more acidic than a pH of 4. And if you go on Google fluids with a pH of 1, you'll find that it will talk about how you need to wear protective gear to handle it, and that they're highly corrosive, and yet that's pretty much what you're splashing around in the stomach of a horse that hasn't had hay and then goes out to work. So the acid will just literally just eats holes through the top of the stomach, and that's how you end up with the squamous ulcers, the ulcers up in the top part of the stomach. I guess one of the biggest changes, one of the most important considerations in terms of feeding racehorses and that timing of feeding is feeding them hay before you work them. And the best hay to use is loosened hay. One, because generally they like it and they'll eat it early in the morning when you give it to them. And two, because loosened is actually a natural buffer. So it's high in calcium, high in protein, and it will actually raise the pH of the fluid in the stomach as well. So if you feed them hay before work, you fill the stomach up with fiber, you increase the pH of the fluid in the stomach, and you will dramatically reduce the risk of gastric.
Yeah, it's certainly an area that we've really worked on, and you see it in horses' behaviour as well. And horses never shy away from expressing how they actually feel. So you just sort of notice these things.
So I think we've seen over the last year, we've started to structure our data in a way that we can actually look at the severity and how common ulcers are. And we've seen a real drastic decrease in severe grade 4 ulcers, I think. And we're starting to gastroscope them a little bit more standardized. Deck at Ballarat is now looking at them sort of 90 days into their work just before trialing. So we've got a nice little point in time where we're actually monitoring that a lot better. But I think, Nerida, one of the greatest benefits was getting you on board was to come on board, and you were just having some observations initially across all of our locations that we think that we're quite standardized, but there are little intricacies across each location. Behaviorally, you notice some small differences of the horses at each location. Obviously, Dingle, Cranbourne, Ballarat, sort of very different environments. But yeah, just it was really interesting to hear what you'd found there. And also just looking at the hay, I think a lot of that ulceration rate decrease in the severe grade 4 and grade 3 ulcers is down to the fact that we're always just looking at we're ensuring that all horses have hay across all times of the day to ensure that buffer.
Yeah. Hay all the time is so incredibly important for physical health and also psychological health, because they're driven to chew. So horses, you'll notice one of my favourite things to do is sit with my horses when they're eating hay, and you can actually see them when they're in that head down position and chewing. It's almost like their little eyelids go sleepy and they've got all sorts of saliva flowing out of their mouth. So it's a really relaxing position for them to be in. So I think psychologically it's really important, and then a happy horse is obviously going to be one that will likely perform better than a horse that's more stressed. But also physiologically from their gut perspective, because of that constant acid flow into the stomach, and also their massive hindgut. They've got a huge hindgut that is set up just to ferment fibre from forages. So it's super important to have hay available all the time. And I think it's probably, for me, it's the biggest difference between what a majority of trainers do in Australia and what pretty much every trainer does in Japan. Is in Japan, there is always hay available and they feed so much hay to their racehorses. Whereas here, the Australian industry tends to have more of a view that hay is not the best feed for a racehorse, and we tend to be more on a really grain-heavy way of feeding, and it does a lot of damage in their gut when they don't get enough hay. So, yeah, I think it's been a really positive thing. Across all of your stables, you were doing a really good job already of hay, because typically there was a lot of hay being fed, and it was in some stables it was just we need more hay or to top up our hay more in the afternoon. But you were already not the norm in Australia, and I think we've just taken that and improved it again on top of what you were already doing. And there was differences. It's having a lot of locations and a lot of horses and a lot of people in the different stables. It is a tricky thing to get them standardised, but getting that loosen before work standardised across all of your stables, I think, is a great thing physiologically and also mentally too, again, for the horses. If they're in that routine of I get loose and hay first thing in the morning and then moving from stable to stable and that's always the same, then that's a really good thing for them too, because you both know they're creatures of habit. They start to look for what they expect. Yeah, lots of hay. Hay is always good for a horse. If you can feed more hay.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a big change to our feeding, right? Well, just an improvement across the board. And along the behaviour line, obviously tie-ups are a big issue that I don't think anyone really fully understands. And we know nutrition has something to do with it, but you get told different things: reduce the grain, give them more of this, take this away, feed them at this time. Is there something from a nutritional point of view that we can implement? I know that we've had some advice from you through that and certainly seen some improvements, but yeah, just this overview or something that people can take away from that.
Yeah, I mean tying up's a tricky one, because there's many different ways it can actually happen. But if you're looking at your classic young, more anxious filly, that form of tying up is linked to behavior. I don't think still they understand in the research why it happens, but for some reason when you get that anxious behaviour, the calcium channels that are responsible for contracting and relaxing the muscles malfunction. And so the muscles will contract, but they won't relax properly. And if we can get on top of their behaviour, then that tends to lessen the likelihood that they'll tie up. Hay comes into this again. If they're happy, content and chewing on hay a lot, that does wonders for their anxiety or lessening their anxiety. So that's really important. Loosen before work is really important, because when you've got pH 1 fluid splashing around in your stomach, it's painful. And if you're associating pain with every morning going out and doing track work and actually really hurting, then that, like, I know for me as a human, if there was something I had to do that really hurt every day, I'd start to get anxious about it as well. So they're keeping their gut really comfortable. And then the third biggest part of it is just being really conscious of the grain and where it's been digested. So exactly the same as what we were talking about before, if we start to put a lot of grain and therefore a lot of starch into the hindgut of these fillies, you shift the microbe population. And when you shift the microbe population from what they should normally have in their gut, which is microbes that are very focused on fermenting fiber, across to microbes that are more focused on fermenting starch, we get changes in behaviour. And we've known this for a long time. So this was part of my PhD studies, was looking at keeping starch out of the hindgut. And a big reason for that, even back then, was to modify their behaviour, so to keep them calmer and to stop them chewing on things that they shouldn't be chewing on. But so, yeah, with those fillies, it's really important to feed the most digestible grain you can, which is typically extruded grain, because it's so well cooked that it is really digestible in the small intestine and much less ends up in the hindgut. But then equally important is, even when you are feeding extruded grain, don't feed too much. So those fillies, if you can keep a 500 kilo filly on 4 kilos of grain or less, and then using oils or high energy fibers or something if you need more energy on top of that, that's going to make sure that we're not unbalancing the microbes in her hindgut, which will then trigger the anxiety, which will then trigger the tying up.
Yeah, when you put it like that, it seems so simple in a way that it's common sense how one thing affects another. And when you get the end result, I think a lot of people overlook the nutrition part of it and how much influence that has on behavior, and they're fixing things or trying to, it's like how we use Gastropal or our Metrazol to try and fix an issue that could be prevented or better managed in a way. And this has led to our exclusive deal with Prize and Cop Rice through advice and been learning about what we were trying to achieve. And Prides and Cop Rice have been really good and open and willing to research the area, and we would collaborate this partnership. Really looking forward to learning more and using our own data from also our training to improve the overall health of our horses. And we've actually done a small research away from Prides, but through looking at gut health, and the findings are quite interesting, and there's a lot of potential future sort of looking further into that. But if you could summarize a little bit without telling the exact results, but it was quite interesting and incredible to see how performance was potentially affected by the findings.
Yeah, the whole gut health space is so exciting at the moment, because we've got the technology to have a look at who's actually living in the gut from a microbe perspective, where we didn't have that technology 20 years ago, and all the time it's getting better. So there's so much opportunity in this space. And what's really fascinating is starting to look at who is living in the gut of a thoroughbred, and how does that differ from horses that are able to roam widely and graze naturally. A big change for our domesticated horses, and particularly for racehorses, is that wild horses and free grazing horses have got access often to quite diverse forage species and forbs and herbs and trees and things that they'll chew on. So a horse in its natural environment will eat many different plant species in any given day, week, month, year. Their diet's really diverse, and that diversity we know actually gives rise to a really diverse microbe population. When we bring horses into training, it's typically not very practical to go around and collect 20 or 30 plant species to give them to eat. And sometimes they come down to just one type of hay. And I know it's something I've talked to you guys about, is having as many different types of hay in their diet as is practically possible, or using mixed grassy hay as opposed to just a single type of grass or oat hay. Certainly having the lucerne together with the grassy hay gives you some diversity. But yeah, this initial research study was looking at, and I'm not going to steal the researcher's thunder, but it was looking at what do the microbes look like in the gut of free-ranging wild horses that are able to select a diverse range of species versus some of the Kiramar racehorses. And they just showed me the preliminary results the other day, and it's really interesting. And, you know, N equals one at this point, but the horse that had the most messed up, I'm going to say, gut, so the least the horses in the wild, was also a horse that was performing really badly. And I actually went and watched some of her post-race reports, and just so many comments about her behavior, which was really interesting for me, like just a difficult. It's going to be fascinating whether continue on down this track and have a look at your high-performing horses versus your low-performing horses, and see if we can find any indications, because how good would it be if we could test and actually have a look at what's in the gut and then determine either how we're going to feed that horse or whether it needs a treatment of some kind or whether it's just going to tell us that horse is not going to be able to perform until we get their gut right. Yeah, it's a pretty exciting space.
Yeah, and it's always interesting to look at parallels between human performance. Obviously, gut health in humans is the rage, not only in athletes, but in everyone right now. And they say it's got correlations between a lot of things with human physiologically. So yeah, it's no doubt interesting, and we're trying to draw a lot of parallels between the two in terms of athletic performance. So no doubt, very interesting to see this, watch this space, and a lot of those horses where we just don't know that how they're performing and how they're feeling. Yeah, it's fascinating what we've just started to see there with a little bit of research. I think the last one for you, I've just found a very interesting question from that someone's written in. If horses could talk, what would they say they need more or less of in terms of feed?
They would say more hay, more different types of hay.
The name of this episode, more hay, please, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it makes so much sense for so many reasons, but it's, yeah, the more hay you can feed a racehorse, the better. And the cool thing is, I don't know where the thought came from, but maybe from the 60s, maybe even earlier, there was this real thought that hay was just a filler and it added weight to their gut and it didn't really do much else. And so
I think it's the same as chaff.
Yeah.
We're the same. Mm. And obviously we've added chaff through your, was it to chew longer, create more saliva? And
yeah.
Whereas when I grew up, I remember chaff just being a filler. You just top it up, a cheap way to fill up the feed. Yeah.
And if you look at where chaff came from, and chaff was made in Australia because there was a lot of really low quality wheat and barley sort of cereal haze, and the horses would go through and eat the leaf and munch the heads and leave all the stalk. So the owners of these horses thought, we'll fix you and we'll cut it up into tiny little pieces so you can't sift out the stalk. You will eat it because it'll be mixed in with everything else. So I guess there's a logical reason why chaff was looked at as filler. Hay, massively high in energy if you've got the gut set up right for the horse to digest it. And that means making sure you've got the fiber fermenting microbes as a really healthy population in there. Really lovely source of protein. Probably the most exciting thing about forage for me with racehorses, though, is it's high in potassium, and potassium's a natural buffer. You can't unnaturally buffer a horse's system, but the more forage you feed, the more buffered your horse's body is going to be, and then the higher that lactic acid threshold and the longer time to fatigue. So I'm going to say secret weapon. It's not very secret.
We're going to have to cut all this out, Nerida. I had another question that come through. Away from hay, potentially, you're probably going to say hay is the answer. If you've got a stable, you've got sprinters, you've got stayers, should you be feeding those horses the same or should they be different? I know that in Australia, a lot of trainers, there's not a huge amount of variation in the training for the horses, so that might score with the answer. But yeah, should stayers and sprinters be fed differently?
Yeah, I think so, slightly. They're not stark differences, but there is differences. So with your stayers, what you want and need is a lot of energy over a long period of time. If they were relying just on glycogen in their muscles, which is what you're getting from the grain starch, they'd burn it up pretty quick and then fatigue. So what you want with your stayers is huge amounts of energy pouring out of the hindgut. Fermentation of fibres is what is driving the energy coming out of there. For me, with stayers, typically what I like to do, slightly less grain and more fermentable fibre options, and oil is a really good energy source for stayers. So they typically are a little bit higher in oil. The diets as well. And then your sprinters, because it's such explosive speed over a short period of time, there's not a lot of oxygen in that system. So they're pretty much working in that energy generation with no oxygen zone. And so they're really reliant on the muscle glycogen as energy. Slightly more grain, but you can't push it too hard either because then you mess up their hindgut. Slightly more grain, but still the fibres are a really important source of energy because they still need to get onto the track and there's a lot that they need to do that you don't want them burning up their muscle glycogen supplies for. So it's not like you feed them lots of grain and not very much fibre. You still have to give them a lot of fibre, but slightly more grain and still oil. Like, I still like to use oil in all their diets, and particularly a high omega-3 oil because it's such an important nutrient for them. But we don't rely on oil so much for energy in the sprinters' diets.
Yeah, fantastic.
really fascinating. We're just skimming the surface, I think, in terms of what we can do, and hopefully our partnership with Coprice and Prides, along with Nerida, your great mind in this space, will lead to some great advancements in the space of equine nutrition. Thanks again, Nerida, for being on this episode. It's been fascinating, and we'll no doubt put some information out in our EDM that goes out with this episode.
Yeah, thanks so much, Nerida. A lot of information to digest. That's a good one.
Yeah.
I think the big takeaway, though, really is the importance of nutrition and how much influence nutrition can have on the overall well-being of our horses' gut health and how the behavior we see as good horsemen and horsewomen that we are, we see the behavior, but how much actually can come from just the basis of feed and the influence of hay and the effect of like these small things that we can change and will lead to the overall result of what we're trying to achieve with our racehorse, and that's winning races and doing it in the best way for the horse.
Yeah, absolutely. It has so much influence, and you do a good job of it. It's not rocket science for the most part. You do a good job of feeding, and they'll race for you, they'll race longer for you, and they're happier while they're doing it, which is, you know, that's important to me and to you guys and to everyone who loves horses. So it's a wins all round.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Nerida.